Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much, everybody. You're very kind. Welcome, one and all, to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Now, we've been off for a week. We're tan, we're rested, we're ready.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff happened. If you're a Britophile, there's huge news in merry old UK because they're getting a new prime minister. I don't quite understand how they have a new one because they vote on the other side of the road. But however they do it, it's official. The UK's next prime minister will be former Chancellor Rishi Sunak, who will be Britain's first leader of South Asian descent, its first Hindu prime minister, and the nation's first leader of color, which means Britons will be able to run their entire power grid off the turbines connected to Queen Victoria spinning in her grave. You know? It's a different view. Different view on such matters, was what I'm saying. Sunak got the job after the former prime minister, Liz Truss, resigned on Thursday. Wow. It's a rough year to be a Liz in the UK. Somebody check on Liz Hurley. Truss now holds the distinction of being the UK's shortest-serving prime minister ever after holding the title for just 45 days. That's not a term in office. That's a juice cleanse. So, nothing? Thank you. Congratulations to incoming Prime Minister Sunak and Liz. To commemorate your historically short term in office, we've compiled all of our favorite moments from your term. I will remember. Speaking of voting, please do it while you still can, because as the midterms approach, a recent New York Times Siena College Wendy's Baconator poll shows 71% of all voters believe the democracy is at risk, while the other 29% say, the poll is rigged, hang Mike Pence. So, hang Mike Pence. I don't know, hang Mike Pence. So 71% believes democracy is in peril, and yet only 7% identified that as the most important problem facing the country. Kind of hard to fix anything else without a functioning democracy. Hello, 911. I just crashed my Pontiac into a tree. Now it's on fire. Can you send someone immediately to fix my 6 CD changer? Yes, I still have a 6 CD changer. Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms. Why? Yeah, he got the action. Yeah, it's a great song. These poll results have raised concerns that democratic erosion may have sent many citizens on a downward spiral of feeling powerless, apathetic, and disconnected. Yeah, but what can you do? It doesn't matter. I don't want to think about it. By the way, powerless, apathetic, and disconnected were the original names of Snap, Crackle, and Pop. You want to feel some delicious cereal. Part of this complete breakfast. If you want to feel better about democracy, don't think about the fact that the newest senator from Georgia could soon be GOP nominee and steroids Urkel, Herschel Walker. Walker's gotten in trouble multiple times for lying about being a police officer. So in a recent debate, his opponent, Raphael Warnock, called him out on it.
One thing I have not done, I've never pretended to be a police officer, and I've never threatened a shootout with the police.
Well, and now I have to respond to that.
We are moving on, gentlemen.
I have to respond to that. And you know what's so funny? I am with many police officers.
Now, critics say he can't just pull out a prop badge to prove he's a cop, to which I say, tell that to the sheriff of Party City. Okay? Woo! Pull it over. Okay? That's real. Where I am also fire chief, head nurse, and royalty-free wizarding child. Expectum no lawsuit. Herschel's defending his sham badge, claiming it was given to him by the Cobb County Sheriff, which makes him an honorary deputy. Okay, but that doesn't make you a real cop. That's why flight attendants never say, attention passengers, we have a medical emergency in the cabin. Does anyone here have an honorary doctorate? Fine arts or better. Fine arts are better only. No dance. But Walker has grabbed that crazy ball and is running with it. His campaign ordered 1,000 imitation plastic law enforcement badges that say, I'm with Herschel as a fundraising tool. 1,000 toy badges? That's perfect. It's one for each of his secret children. Don't know where that came from. I don't know where that came from. We're learning more about the former president's time in office from investigative journalist and grandpa at the zoo who just saw a penguin, Bob Woodward. Woodward has released several books about the former president based on phone interviews, and now he's releasing an audiobook containing recordings of the full 8 hours of interviews. Woodward described the former president as the wrong man for the job. Now, after re-listening to the audio, he says, I realize I didn't go far enough. The former president is an unparalleled danger. Really, Bob? Now you're realizing this. I look forward to your next op-ed. Something seems off about this Harvey Weinstein guy. Op-ed. Op-ed.
Op-ed.
Op-ed. Op-ed. How's it going? The Washington Post published a few of the clips, and yeah, they're bad. Here's how the former president spoke about COVID at the height of the pandemic.
Was there a moment in all of this last 2 months where you said to yourself, this is the leadership test of a lifetime?
No. I don't take responsibility for this.
It's also what he says on Eric's birthday. The recordings. The recordings also capture how special it was for him to meet Kim Jong-un.
The CIA says about Kim Jong-un that he's cunning, crafty, but ultimately stupid.
I disagree. He's cunning, he's crafty, and he's very smart. You know, I'm the only one that knows. I'm the only one he deals with. He won't deal with anybody else. The word chemistry. You meet somebody and you have a good chemistry. You meet a woman. In 1 second, you know whether or not it's all going to happen.
Wow. Did he and Kim Jong-un... I mean, whatever. Whatever makes you happy. Love is love, but it really gives a whole new meaning to Little Rocket Man. Let me be clear. A penis meaning. Turning to the world of sport, it's official. The Houston Astros and Philadelphia Phillies will face each other in the World Series. For New Yorkers, it's hard to pick a team to back here, considering the Astros are cheaters and the Phillies are from Philly. And down in Philly, to prepare for the victory, Philadelphia, a town that historically
enjoys chaotic street-based sports-related revelry so much that this weekend officials greased light poles in the city. And yet, after the Phillies' victory, the fans were undeterred. Yeah, baby! Get up there! That's where all the fun is! What can I say? Drunk finds a way. The Astros punched their ticket to the series yesterday by sweeping the Yankees, but New Yorkers took their frustrations out on one Astros fan in particular, Senator Ted Cruz, who was in the city for the game. Man, New York does have a rat problem. One Yankees fan captured this video of the senator trying to leave the game.
You racist piece of you! Man!
You suck! You're a disgrace!
You brought it up there! Remember when Trump called your wife
you
ugly?
Suck.
Remember that? Remember when Trump called your wife ugly and then you nominated him?
You're a disgrace to this country!
You remember when those insurrectionists put him a murder?
Yo, go!
You piece of
Trump!
Get the
you
out of
suck!
New York.
Get out of New York!
Trump called your wife
we
ugly!
Don't want
you
here!
You ugly! Get the out of here!
Go ahead, Mickey. To describe how tough New Yorkers are, that was Martha Stewart. In fairness to Ted, that's how Yankee fans react to everyone. Please turn your attention to section 322, where little Billy Jones is celebrating his fourth birthday.
You, Billy, you! You short piece of crap, you can't even ride a bike! You suck, Billy!
We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Late Show. Folks, my first guest tonight is the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who currently leads the United States Department of Transportation. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Thank you for being here again.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Good to be back.
I gotta say, I was just thinking as you were coming out here, I always enjoy having you on here since the first time you were on here as a candidate for a presidency, is that not a lot of secretaries of transportation over the years have been on late night talk shows.
Well, I'm glad to be part of changing that.
Yeah, you are. You're a change maker. We're coming up on the year anniversary of the infrastructure bill, right?
That's right.
Okay, so you've been out there making it rain all over the country. Is infrastructure fun?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the most fun thing about roads and bridges?
I mean, fixing them not being broken. I don't know.
Why,
I mean,
you like fixing stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason why children, for example, are fascinated, right, with trucks and roads and trains and planes. It's exciting. You just got to keep that sense of magic in it when you're doing the very hard blocking and tackling of maintaining and building that stuff.
You got the best set of Tonka trucks of all time.
All time.
Now, this is like, you've actually, you know, been interested in infrastructure for a long time. As the mayor of South Bend, here you are getting a giant novelty check for the roads of South Bend for $670,000. 2017. 5 years later, here you are as the Secretary of Transportation giving out the giant novelty check for $19.5 million in New Hampshire. I mean, talk to me about the big novelty check. This seems like a pretty small check for $19.5 million. Shouldn't the size of the check reflect the size of the amount. So if you get into billions, you need to, like, a flatbed truck to bring the check.
I guess, yeah. It'd be harder to fit it on a plane that way, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, I think it is important not to be too subtle about the message, because I think sometimes folks forget what government is doing for them if we fail to make it clear. And, of course, it's not just about the check. It's about the results. The project we're doing there in New Hampshire, for example, is going to help them in a very blue-collar town that hasn't gotten the attention that it's needed for their downtown streets. We're going to help them transform the economic opportunities of that community with funding that's going to go to redoing their streetscapes. And they have this biomass power plant nearby, which has to do a lot in order to cool. They have a cooling tower. And there's a way they can actually route some of the coolant, or the water that comes from that tower under the sidewalks, melting the snow and saving taxpayer money on the process of plowing it. So, as a former mayor,
the power plant melts the sidewalks. That's
right. They're basically taking the waste heat. It helps the power plant cool off their get rid of their waste heat, and it helps the town deal with snow, which any mayor from north of a certain latitude knows that, you know, the battle of mayors versus snow is second only to the battle of mayors versus potholes in, you know, the great kind of predator-prey relationships in local government. And now I get to be someone who's helping mayors across the country, like I used to be, deal with things like that.
So you, as the Secretary of Transportation, the infrastructure bill is $1.2 trillion.
Yep.
Okay. When you were mayor, rounding up to the nearest trillion, how much money did you... did you have at your control then?
So it would be about, what is that, like a percent of a percent? Much, much less.
Much less. So rounding up to the first trillion, it would be $1 trillion. $1 trillion, rounding up.
Yes, if you rounded that way, I suppose it would.
Rounding up.
Yeah.
Rhodes Scholar?
Yes.
Okay.
Technically, yeah.
All right. Does it make you mad, or do you get frustrated when people who voted against the bill, like Rick Scott and Representative Tony Gonzalez, don't refuse the money and then actually make a big deal about having gotten the money for their constituents?
It is striking that people went to the floor of the House or Senate and said, no, this infrastructure funding should not happen. And then they can't wait to be there when that funding is coming to their district. Mm-hmm. But
do you make them hold the big check?
I hadn't thought about that. I might try that.
It'd be good. You and the check and them.
But I also, there's nothing better than seeing a skeptic become a convert. And so, you know, I think, I call it the sincerest form of flattery. If somebody was against your policy, and then when it's actually benefiting people who live in their communities, they can't hug you close enough. And I'll say this, I mean, politics aside, the people who live in those communities shouldn't be punished because their senator or their House member said no to this funding. We're going to serve everybody equally.
I suspect you would say something like that. I suspected you would have the best interest of the American people at heart.
Well, thanks. I'd like to think that's how we think about things. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the top. I mean, don't get me wrong. It can be frustrating politically when you see that sort of stuff go on. But, you know, look, this is part of a pattern that we've often seen where many congressional Republicans take stances that seem to be more about the problem than about the solution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at even the things that they talk about the most often, immigration, inflation. I mean, name of all the things congressional Republicans have proposed policy-wise, can anybody name the top five things that they've suggested to fight inflation? Can anyone name three? How about one? You know, they voted no on the Inflation Reduction Act that was about lowering prices for Americans. And I would have loved nothing more than to have a debate between the Democratic Inflation Reduction Act and the Republican Inflation Reduction Act on the House of the floor and Senate, and argued over which one was better, but there was only one, and it was ours. And luckily, it passed.
Let's talk about... I want to talk about electric vehicles. There's money in the Inflation Reduction Act, actually, for putting chargers out there for people.
Yep. And lowering the cost.
And lowering the cost. Okay, I was looking for a new car. I've got a 9-year-old car, and it's a nice car, but it's getting on. And so I wanted to go get a new car, and I wanted to get a hybrid, you know?
That's what we have.
A electric, gas, electric hybrid with a very high hybrid number. So mostly I'm just on the electric part of it as I go around the city. I go in there, and the guy says to me as I get in the car, it's a nice car, and he goes, you know what, I tell you, I don't think the grid's going to be able to handle all these electric cars. I wouldn't get this car. He tries to talk me out of the car. because he's worried about the grid. Should I be worried about the grid?
I gotta have a word with this guy.
You do. Should I be worried about the grid? Because people are saying, like, the grid's not gonna be handle all this electric cars. Is that true?
It's true that we can't run tomorrow's cars on yesterday's grid. It's why we're also upgrading the grid. You remember last year, there was this big debate when we were doing the infrastructure law over what's infrastructure. And then there were some people who were saying, it's only infrastructure if it's roads and bridges. And we were saying, pipes are infrastructure, broadband internet is infrastructure, and grid improvements are infrastructure. And sure enough, those were in the bill too. So of that $1.2 trillion, about half of it is transportation. The other half is things like getting rid of lead water pipes, getting everybody broadband internet access, and improving the grid, partly for this very reason, which is we're gonna have more electrical demand as we're plugging in cars more and more as a way of charge, but it's still more efficient. Even if the energy is coming from fossil fuels, which is part of the mix for electricity, it's still more efficient, if you just think about it, to turn that energy into electricity at a utility-scale plant and then send it through our wires into homes and chargers and charge vehicles that way than to individually load gallons of that fuel into millions of individual engines and combust it there one at a time. So, yes, we need to upgrade our grid. Yes, we need to upgrade our technology, but it's the right move for the climate. And at the end of the day, it makes us more resilient, too.
We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I will ask the secretary what it's like to be a new father.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
You're an excellent communicator. I thought you were a great candidate in 2020. And, you know, whenever, you know, down the road you ever run for office again, whether it's, you know, 2 years from now or 18 months from now, how do you feel about the fact that there are 300 Republican candidates on the ballot in just a few weeks who question the legitimacy of the last election and some who outright believe that it should be overturned? When you saw the New York Times poll, 71% of Americans believe the democracy is in peril. How do you run for office and do so to a public that is losing its faith in the legitimacy or at least the efficacy of their vote?
So one of the most important principles in democracy is that when you lose, you accept the outcome. And I've had to do that. Winning is much more fun than losing. I've done both. But when you lose, you accept the outcome. And the reason that's so important is because we expect the same thing from citizens in terms of policy decisions. In other words, part of what it means to live in a democracy is that we have this process for getting decisions that all of us have to live by, those of us who agreed with the decision and those of us who were against it, whether it's a court decision or a decision by Congress on what the law ought to be. And so if we all have to live with the outcome of each of these policy choices, it's only fair that the people who make them have to live with the outcome of when we choose which one of them's gonna be in charge. That's how the bargain works.
Since the last time you and I were here together, you're now a dad. You and your husband, Chester, are now dads of twins.
Twins.
How has being a parent changed your view of your role as a citizen and your role as a public servant and the importance of our country?
I mean, it changes everything. because first of all, you're training your replacement, right? So you're more conscious, I think.
Yeah,
and you're more, so you have a different relationship with the future. And I think politics and policy is all about the future. It's definitely true with infrastructure because we're making decisions that will, my children, when they are old, will be depending in some cases on bridges and tunnels and trains and airports and things that we're going to build right now in the early 2020s. The same way that we, for better or for worse, depend on infrastructure that was built 100 years ago. And so, you know, at work, I think about that differently. And at home, I think the biggest thing you discover, the first thing that amazed me, I think Chasten and me both, when you hold them in your arms, how tiny and how vulnerable they are and how completely dependent they are on you. I mean, you know, most animals, most mammals, like within a day or two, they can kind of stagger around and you know, you have an infant in your hands. They just literally can't do anything without you. But then what's amazing is in very short order, as you learn to take care of them, you realize how dependent you are because you as a parent can't do anything without friends and family and loved ones. And I would add, you know, living in a society that is organized in order to at least attempt to make it easier to raise children. Mm-hmm. So you begin by realizing how dependent they are on you, and then you come to realize how dependent you are on everybody else. And it's changed our relationships in a beautiful way, but to our own parents and to our neighbors and to our friends and everybody who's involved in this incredible project of raising human beings.
Secretary, thank you for being here.
Good luck with that human being raising.
Thank you.
It's relentless.
It seems to be.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, everybody.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pod Show, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wildcard, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.